Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stephen Arvin, registration number 39020, representing Mr. Cooper. Today I plan on addressing only the first issue raised in Mr. Cooper's briefs, that is the issue concerning how the prosecutor's misconduct may have influenced the jury's verdict. I do not plan on addressing the second issue, however, if this court has, clarify how the misconduct may have influenced the jury's verdict regarding the possession of a weapon by a previous offender conviction. I do not plan on addressing the second issue concerning the menacing conviction. However, if this court has any questions concerning that issue, I'll be happy to take those questions. The prosecutor committed several acts of misconduct concerning the possession of a weapon charge. It relied heavily on distortions of the law and distortions of the evidence to disprove Mr. Cooper's affirmative defense. This misconduct undermined the trial's fairness and cast serious doubt on the reliability of the jury's verdict. First, the prosecutor grossly distorted the law surrounding Mr. Cooper's defense to the possession charge. Mr. Cooper's defense to that charge hinged on the affirmative defense that he kept the gun in issue to protect himself from wildlife on his ranch, specifically coyotes and rattlesnakes. This defense arose from Article 2, Section 13 of the Colorado Constitution, which establishes the right of a person to keep and bear arms in defense of his home, person, and property. Before closing arguments, a jury instruction conference was held, and there was some dispute between the parties as to whether this right extended to people seeking protection from wildlife as well as human intruders. The trial court correctly determined that the right does extend to those seeking protection from wildlife, and accordingly agreed to issue an instruction on the Mr. Cooper's affirmative defense. Yet, despite the trial court's determination, the prosecutor, in closing argument, told the jury that the affirmative defense did not necessarily extend to those seeking to protect themselves from wildlife. The prosecutor told the jury that it was up to them to determine whether or not it did extend to those seeking to protect themselves from wildlife.
Remind me, did the defendant object?
To the prosecutor's statement?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so we're looking at the whole shebang as a harmless, a plain error?
For this particular statement, yes, Your Honor. This will be reviewed under the plain error standard.
Okay.
There are two other comments that I plan on discussing, one of which was also not objected to. The other comment was objected to. That be reviewed under the harmless error.
One did. Two below.
The prosecutor's distortion of testimony during trial.
Thank you.
And you said, Mr. Arvin, that the prosecutor told the jury that the law did not allow possession of a weapon for the purpose of defending against wildlife. Where did he tell where was that? I don't recall that specific statement being made by the prosecutor.
Well, what the prosecutor said, Your Honor, was that it did not necessarily extend to those being seeking to protect themselves from wildlife. The prosecutor...
The only thing I see is saying, the prosecutor saying that I would submit to you that even if you accept that he's allowed to defend from wildlife, even if you accept that, it's your decision what you think this instruction allows. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm referring to, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
And I think from that, the jury must have inferred that it was up to them to decide whether or not this affirmative defense applied to someone in Mr. Cooper's situation. And of course, that's legally incorrect. It was not the role of the jury to make that decision. That decision had been made by the court. And in light of the law, it was unequivocal that Mr. Cooper had a right to possess a weapon to defend himself from wildlife on his property.
And the judge told them correctly that, correct? Did he not, or she?
No, well, Your Honor, the judge issued an instruction simply stating that Mr. Cooper had a right to defend himself, defend his home, person, and property. That instruction, however, did not clarify whether or not that right extended to wildlife. So the judge did not provide any sort of clarification to the jury that might lead them in the right direction concerning what the law is.
This was Mr. Cooper's home.
That's correct.
They were told he did have a right to have a gun and to defend himself.
They were told he had the right to have a gun and defend himself from home, person, and property. That's correct, Your Honor. Of course, the risk is that, in light of the prosecutor's comment, the jury very well may believe that because Mr. Cooper was defending himself from wildlife, he didn't necessarily have a legal right to defend himself, to defend his home, person, and property from wildlife. He did not necessarily have a legal right to possess the gun. Therefore, the jury may have discounted the affirmative defense without analyzing whether or not the prosecutor had discharged his burden to disprove the affirmative defense. This lessened the prosecutor's burden to disprove the affirmative defense and therefore violated Mr. Cooper's right to due process. The prosecutor further lessened his burden of proof by telling the jury that Mr. Cooper's menacing conviction, which the jury found in the first phase of trial, established that he did not possess the gun to defend his home, person, or property. The prosecutor said that in light of this conviction, the affirmative defense was gone.
Is that wrong? The jury just found him guilty, the first part of menacing. Help me understand why what the prosecutor said was wrong.
Well, because even though the jury had convicted Mr. Cooper of menacing, that conviction itself did not necessarily disprove the affirmative defense at issue in the second phase of trial, which was whether the affirmative defense was rested on the notion that he possessed the gun to defend his home, person, or property. In light of the prosecutor's comments, the jury may have decided that it did not need to determine whether or not the prosecutor had disproved the affirmative defense and simply discounted it without analyzing the evidence in the second phase of trial. The prosecutor also misrepresented testimony from trial in an apparent attempt to undermine Mr. Cooper's credibility. The prosecutor referred to testimony that Mr. Cooper had made to the effect that he had kept the gun in issue to protect his ranch from coyotes. The prosecutor then said that two of Mr. Cooper's friends had testified that, in their experience, guns had never been used to scare away coyotes from Mr. Cooper's property. However, this was not true. That in reality, these friends testified to the opposite. They testified that guns had, in fact, been used to scare away coyotes from Mr. Cooper's property. One of them, I believe, in fact, testified that he himself had used them to scare away coyotes from Mr. Cooper's ranch. The evidence that the prosecutor had to disprove the affirmative defense was relatively thin. There was, however, abundant evidence to support the defense. The statements I mentioned earlier from Mr. Cooper's friends that guns had been used previously to scare away coyotes from the property. There's undisputed testimony from four witnesses that coyotes had been spotted on the property. And of course, there was Mr. Cooper's own testimony that coyotes frequently came onto the ranch, destroyed his property. They had once pulled back a wire fence on a neighbor's property and eaten two puppies. And Mr. Cooper feared that these coyotes posed a similar threat to his dog. So given the state of the evidence, the prosecutor very well may have been unable to disprove the affirmative defense without making the distortions of law and distortions of evidence that he did in his closing arguments. If this goes no further questions, I reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, I'm Patricia Van Horn, registration number 30,002, and I represent the people in this matter. The comments that the defendant complains about, the ones that we assess for plain error, I'd like to read what the comment was exactly. I would submit to you that even if you accept he's allowed to defend himself from wildlife as opposed to human intruders, and it's your decision what you think this instruction allows you to feel that he can defend himself from. So the prosecutor didn't say that he couldn't defend against wildlife, and I think given the ambiguous nature of that comment, it certainly doesn't rise to the level of plain error. As to the second comment, the instant he possessed a firearm for the purpose of menacing the victim, that affirmative fence is gone because this is not for the purpose of defending his property from coyotes or rattlesnakes. Once again, plain error standard of review. There's nothing that's flagrantly bad about that comment. It is also very ambiguous what he means. And I'm not entirely sure whether that is legally accurate or not, given the dearth of law in this area. And the other comment about the misstatement of evidence, the trial court immediately instructed the jury that they were to rely on their own recollections of the testimony. And I think that's sufficient to cure any prejudice. If this court has no questions, I'd ask that the conviction be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. We have minutes left. Still trying to figure that out. Yeah, I know you had a little over 5 minutes,
yes, but not 13.
Not 13. Hold on just a moment, if you would. There we go. There you go. You have 5:43 or 5:40.
Thank you. I'd like to just talk a little bit more about why this rises to the level of plain error. Specifically, the prosecutor's comment that it was up to the jury to decide whether or not the affirmative defense applied. This went to the heart of Mr. Cooper's defense. Mr. Cooper's entire defense rested on the affirmative defense that he possessed this gun to defend his property from wildlife. If the jury discounted that defense, if the jury did not even give the defense any credit because it believed that it could just discount the defense as legally meritless, then obviously that would have gutted Mr. Cooper's entire defense in this phase of trial. And again, I think when you look at the state of the evidence, in light of the fact that the prosecutor bore the burden of disproving an affirmative defense, this shows how egregious the prosecutor's comment was. There really wasn't a lot of evidence to disprove Mr. Cooper's affirmative defense. The evidence to do that was relatively thin. So it's quite likely that the prosecutor's comment, an encouragement to the jury to simply discount the defense as legally meritless, is what led to Mr. Cooper's conviction in this case. If the court has no further questions, I ask you reverse my client's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you both for your arguments. This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.